halfway through today's show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Michael Remus. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program. He covers the Detroit Red Wings for the Windsor Star, Bob Duff. Bob, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Bob. Bob, we were spending last segment talking about Niklas Lidström and his retirement announcement from earlier this week. You know, even though it had sort of been a year-by-year proposition for the last few years, how surprised were the Red Wings that Lidström decided to retire at this time?
I think they had a suspicion at the end of the playoffs that this was it for him. No one would say anything on the record about it, but the tenor of the room and within management and the coaching staff, you just sensed that they knew this was it. It just wasn't the same kind of sense that you had a year ago. Last year, when he went through the same routine of taking his month to make his mind up, I was sure he was coming back. And 2 days after the season ended this year, I wrote a column saying I'm just as sure this year that he's not coming back, other than just a gut feeling and a hunch I had just based on the way the year went and from talking to Nick, that he had made his mind up, and turned out I was right.
Do you know the lottery numbers for tonight then?
No, I've never had much luck with those.
Okay.
Bob, in no particular order, is it 1-2 as far as best defenseman of all time, Bobby Orr and Niklas Lidström?
I think so. I think the thing about Nick is you have to watch him on a regular basis to really appreciate just how good he is, because he's not a flashy player. I like to always say about him, he'll never make play of the day, but he makes the plays that pay off at the end of the day. He's just always in the right spot. He always keeps the game simple. I think Ryan Clough of the Sharks said it best. He said, I don't know how that guy makes such a hard game look so easy.
You know, it's been assumed that Lidström and Thomas Holmström are a package deal. Do you expect that Holmström will be the next one to hold a press conference?
I wouldn't be surprised. They're very, very close friends, and I'm sure if the Wings had thought that re-signing Holmström for another year would bring Lidström back for another year, they'd have done it in a matter of seconds. But Holmström did say at the end of the year that he wanted to play another year, so it'll be interesting to see how it plays out now. He also said he wasn't happy with his ice time last year, and really I can't see him with his physical condition, with the bad knees and the body breaking down the way it is at age 40 from the pounding he's taken. I can't really see him being anything other than a kind of a fourth line guy and a power play specialist, which is mostly what he was this year, and he doesn't really sound like he's wanting to do that again, so that'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Bob Duff of the Windsor Star. Bob, you know, every year we probably have this conversation, and every year the answer is usually the same. But with losing Lidström and maybe losing Holmström, is it now safe to say that the Red Wings' window of Stanley Cup contention may be closing?
I don't know if it's closing, but really they haven't been a major player in the playoffs now for 3 years. Now, they haven't made it past the second round in 3 straight seasons, and that's a pretty lengthy lull in their terminology. It's not, you know, they don't miss the playoffs, and usually they're, you know, every 2 or 3 years they're at least in the conference final. So they haven't really been an impact playoff team for a few years. And another guy we haven't even talked about that they'll likely lose is Brad Stewart, who seems set to go back to California. And it is a situation where you wonder, you know, and we wondered the same thing when Yzerman and Shanahan, Larionov and Fedorov and those guys departed, you know, is this going to be the end? And they reloaded and just kept going. And you look at the potential out there, and the big, you know, the hottest rumor in hockey is that the Wings are going to use all this sudden cap space to bring in Parise and Suter as a package, which, according to sources, is what they want. They're good friends who want to play for the same team. And I understand from people I know within the Wings organization and around the league that both are very, very interested in playing for Detroit.
Bob, you mentioned Ryan Suter, and the Red Wings were rumored to be interested in Ryan Suter before Lidström announced his retirement. Now that Niklas Lidström has announced his retirement, you know, does that increase the likelihood that the Wings are going to go harder after Ryan Suter?
Well, I think they were going to go hard after him regardless of Lidstrom's decision. They just see him, and especially if Stewart departs, which seems very likely. He has his wife has remained in California and doesn't want to leave there, and he has a child as well, and he's not seeing his family basically the whole season. So I think his heart is set on going back to California, and the Wings have pretty much recognized that that's the likely scenario. So they saw Suter as a replacement for Stewart at the very least, and now obviously with Lidstrom gone, it almost becomes paramount if they want to contend next year that they have to get him.
If they replace Suter, say, with Lidstrom with Suter, is there a sort of a secondary defenseman that they go after to try and replace Stewart?
Well, they brought Kyle Quincy in at the end of the last year to kind of,
sure,
you know, under the expectation they were going to lose Stewart. And the other guy who's kind of the X factor that no one really talks about is Brendan Smith, who got a good look late in the season and showed a lot of high-end skill, and is a kid that looks like he's going to be a player. Now, whether he'll be that impact player next year is another matter, but he certainly looks like long-term he's going to be quite an NHL defenseman. And I think you'll also see Nicholas Cronwall will step up from kind of his second pairing role into a lot of the situations that Lidstrom would have played in past years.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Bob Duff of the Windsor Star Detroit Red Wings.
We've gone over the defense, but now moving on to the forwards, Yuri Hudler is the only major UFA for the Red Wings. Will they make a concerted attempt to re-sign him, or has he exhausted all of his chances to be an impact player for the Red Wings?
I don't think he'll be priority one for them, and the likelihood is a team out there that is limited in offensive ability will make Hudler an offer that's probably more than he's actually worth, and that would deter the Wings from re-signing him. They've basically said off the record they want Hudler back at their price, not at his price. So if he's willing to play for pretty much the same money as he's making now, they'll sign him. If he wants a significant raise, I think you'll see him playing somewhere else.
Bob, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, Rick Nash is obviously still on the trade market, and the thought process was that the Red Wings might make a run at him during the off season, not during the season that when he first approached the trade market. Do you think the Red Wings still have a legitimate interest in Nash, or is their focus going to be on the Parise-Suter combo platter?
I would be surprised if they were players in the Nash sweepstakes. It may depend on what happens with Parise. If they don't get a shot at him and they figure they still need to improve their offense, and they certainly have made it clear they want more size up front. But Kenny Holland's always been a guy who doesn't like to trade a lot of assets to acquire players. He's always preferred the free agent route and trading draft picks for players rather than personnel. So they're going to want a whole lot of people and draft picks for Nash, and I just don't know if the Wings are the team that's going to be willing to do that.
Bob Duff from the Windsor Star, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's always a pleasure.
Take care, Bob. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bob.
All right.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to a break a little bit earlier than normal. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come on the program, Gary Lawless live from New Jersey and Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago. We just heard from Bob Duff. Prior to that, we'd heard from Matt Lachlan and Rick Ralph. In case you missed any of the program, it is available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. What do you want, Ezzy? You're frantically motioning at me.
No, I'm not, but I think It's time for me to tell a story about my best friend Richard Pollock, who's in Toronto and not with us today. So Richie left for Toronto on Thursday, and the main purpose of his trip is to spend time with his good friend Adam Gutkin, who used to write for IllegalCurve.com. He's a friend of all of ours.
Also going to see the Dave Matthews Band?
Yes, and they're going to see Dave Matthews Band. Great band.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan.
Okay.
But Richard and Adam also had a bit of a special day yesterday. I'm at work, and Richard is BBMing me. How's it going?
Which is ironic, of course, because usually you spend all your days at work BBMing Richard.
Right. Hopefully nobody that I work for is listening to this right now, because I would be in big trouble. But it is Friday. So Richard had told me what he was doing, but I didn't know when he was getting it. So basically, I'll come out with it. Richard and Adam, our good friends, went for manicures and pedicures. And Richard decided to send me pictures while he was getting them. And if you have ever listened to Howard Stern, which I know Remus does, Howard Stern, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, was talking about how he went for a manicure and he got a shiny buff.
Which is just shiny nail polish.
Right. And Richie BBM'd me and told me that he also, I think it's an extra $10 or something, $5 or $10, and he got the shiny buff. And I have now pictures on my iPhone.
Are you going to tweet out those pictures?
I probably should. If we're going to throw Richie under the bus, we should probably go full bore ahead and throw him under that bus.
If you want to see the pictures from Richard's manicure and pedicure, you can just follow Ezra on Twitter, at ICEzzyG. Those pictures will be available momentarily. Richard probably is not coming back to Winnipeg as a result of this, but that's okay. Once he told us that he was going for a manicure and pedicure, really, you had to figure that this was going to come up on air. There's no doubt about it.
It's only tradition that once you go out of town, you get thrown under the bus repeatedly on this show.
Absolutely. We throw each other under the bus when we're amongst each other.
Yeah.
So we're obviously, when you're in a different city or country, it's going to be just more so.
Oh, without a doubt. So anyways, Richard, he's actually also at the Jays game at the moment, so I'm sure his BlackBerry will start to light up.
He's showing off his shiny buff.
Of course. Well, you know, he's trying to impress the Toronto ladies and contingent with his well-manicured toenails and fingernails.
Now, Ezra, are you going to tag him in this tweet, or are you just going to
I think you should tag him. You should tag him.
At IC Richie P.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tag him.
Okay, that's good. This segment, not brought to you by our local manicurist, but is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill. It is a beautiful day outside, as really anybody who's outside knows that right now. Best place to hang out? Head down to the Cheer Bar and Grill. They got their beautiful patio set up. You can sit back, have a few bevvies before the puck drop later on. You know, go there this afternoon, have your nice time on the patio, go inside and watch the hockey game there tonight.
We were there for game one. Lots of fun.
Game one. Great time.
Overtime.
Big crowd.
Had the overtime pool going again.
Yeah, exactly. The ICOT pool. So, with Cheer Bar and Grill located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Big screens, HD TVs everywhere. Great patio. Great place to have a good time at the Cheer Bar and Grill, one of the official sponsors of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I want to talk about some of the goings on in the NHL this week. And we talked about it briefly with Rick Ralph. This Tim Thomas stuff, has really, I think, gone overboard at this point in time. You're 38 years old. You're talking about taking a year off from playing in order to come back a year from now. Why would the Boston Bruins, with Tuukka Rask, who seems to be a legitimate number one goaltender, why would the Boston Bruins even entertain the idea of bringing Tim Thomas back into their dressing room, even if he doesn't take a year off?
Oh, I thought he was already on his way out.
Probably. He's still under contract. Still has a one-year contract with the Bruins. So they can trade him.
Is he now the Boston version of Ilya Bryzgalov?
I would say that there's certainly some distraction similarities compared to how they speak too much, and they probably put too much of the spotlight on themselves, and they're both a little bit eccentric. But, I mean, this is really, the team was willing to put up with the White House stuff. But this is just, anytime you're saying to your teammates, look, I'm going to take a year off, the word that comes to my mind is quitter.
Well, obviously, if you're under a contract, the man thing to do would be to honor that contract and play with the final year.
Or retire.
Or retire. Well,
retire. If he wants to retire, he's 38 years old, and he's had a great career, and he won a Stanley Cup, and he was underappreciated for a number of years. But if you don't have the fire in your heart anymore to play NHL hockey, there's nothing wrong with retiring.
And see, that's what it kind of seems like to me, Drew. And we've documented it on this radio show, and everyone has probably at this point already heard about the problems that he's had this year. And it really ended pretty badly in the playoffs. And, to me, Tim Thomas, really, it's affected him. And, we had this argument about whether, it was affecting the Boston Bruins dressing room. But, just on the topic of Tim Thomas, I think this was a really rough year for him. And he doesn't enjoy...
But it's self-inflicted.
Of course it was self-inflicted, but he doesn't enjoy playing in Boston anymore. And, you know, his reasons for sitting out a season, and you see, he's not indicating that he wants to retire. And by him saying out that he wants to sit out next season, and I believe that if he has gone to Peter Chiarelli and said that he wants to sit out next season, he'll never play for the Bruins again.
You listen to Chiarelli's comments in the press conference where he confirmed the story. Chiarelli sounded like a guy who's fed up. He's like, why would I bring this distraction back? This is a good team they still have in Boston.
Absolutely.
They had big injury problems this last year.
Yep.
If they get everybody healthy...
They're one of the best teams in the East still.
I still think so. You get everybody healthy. You make a few upgrades on the back end. They said they already announced. They told Joe Corvo he's not coming back. So you upgrade.
He wasn't very good anyways.
Yeah, it's exactly.
He's a good power play guy.
Yeah, but so you upgrade a little bit. You make some tweaks. This team is still not very far away from contending for a Stanley Cup again.
Well, one player they really messed with was Nate Horton, who
Absolutely.
Was a big player for them last year and was sat out, you know, probably the second half of the season with a concussion.
Absolutely, and they need to get them healthy, and that's a big part. And if they can get their team healthy again and keep them healthy, there really is no reason why they're not Stanley Cup contenders.
I think Tuukka Rask is a better goalie than Tim Thomas, and I think Tuukka Rask is suffering from the same fate, at least to this point, that Corey Schneider has suffered from. And, you know, Tim Thomas, when the Boston Bruins won the Stanley Cup, he was excellent. You know, he's got an unorthodox style, but he always got, and they played confident in front of him. But it's time to go with Tuukka Rask anyways.
Probably. I agree that it probably is time to go for Tuukka Rask. And Tim Thomas, I guess, I don't know if it's ego or what it is, but he just can't accept, you know, falling, you know, accepting his new role as either the backup or perhaps playing for a different team. He has to make the story about himself yet again to the detriment of players who had been his loyal teammates.
See, and you know, remember what you were going to say, but... to me, when Tim Thomas decided to not go with the rest of his team to the White House, you know, I actually respected that. And, you know, some people, you know, disagreed with me, and there were other people that thought that he shouldn't have done that, and he made it about himself. But what really kind of, I think, troubled me, and I still don't think that, you know, anything that Tim Thomas has done has been out of line. I still think that he has the right to voice his opinion. And I think in this day and age, we should be letting people voice their opinion more so, whether you're left wing, right wing, center, whatever. But what troubles me about Tim Thomas is that his approach to the game was different in the playoffs. And he was not the same guy that led the Boston Bruins to the Stanley Cup win last year. They did. You're right. They didn't have Nathan Horton and some of the guys that stepped up for them, like Michael Ryder and Mark Recchi. They didn't have those guys this year. So there was a lot of reasons. The Boston Bruins' inability to have success in this year's playoffs, it doesn't all fall on Tim Thomas. But Tim Thomas definitely, you know, didn't contribute much to the... He didn't play well, and he was...
If they had received average goaltending in the first round,
right,
they would have beaten the Washington Capitals.
Probably, yep. I'd agree with
and
that.
And if Tuukka Rask had been healthy, you got to remember, Tuukka Rask wasn't healthy for the playoffs.
That's right.
They would have yanked Tim Thomas out.
They had Marty Turco as their backup.
And Marty Turco is not an NHL goaltender anymore.
No.
But you would have seen Thomas out of the lineup and Tuukka Rask in the lineup at some point during that series.
Look, Tim Thomas is 38 years old. Anyone can consider or ponder sitting out for a year. You know, actually doing it is totally different. I'm pretty sure he's under contract next year for something like $4.5 million. Now, a career is not an indefinite amount of time. He only has so many years
left.
$5 million. So yep. $5 million.
It's okay. You're close enough.
So he has $5 million left next year. Why wouldn't you just play and take the $5 million? You're not going to have that much opportunity left to be, you know, a goaltender in the NHL. I think he's bluffing here. I don't think there's any way he sits out.
Well, I mean, there's a number of options. If he sits out, he doesn't lose the contract. He doesn't lose the $5 million because it's not like you sit out a year and then you're all of a sudden an unrestricted free agent. The contract doesn't continue on. Like, if he sits out a year and then he comes back next year, he's still property of the Boston Bruins because they would put him on the suspended list, not have to pay him, and still own his rights for another year whenever he comes back. If he never came back, obviously, it wouldn't matter.
If you're Tim Thomas, what's your motivation for doing this? Are you trying to push a trade, or do you legitimately want to sit out?
I mean, if you want to push a trade, you just go ask them for a trade, and I have a feeling they would accommodate you. And you know what? For 1 year at $5 million, there might be a market for Tim Thomas, despite his eccentricities. But sitting out a year does not, you know, if he's sick of Boston, sitting out a year does not solve any of his problems. He still is property of the Boston Bruins when he comes back. Now, if he retires, he's under a 35-plus contract. So if he retires, the Bruins still get hit with that cap hit of $5 million.
Right, and I can understand that, you know, it's been a month since the first round ended, and, you know, Tim Thomas had a tough year, and he's, you know, sitting at home, and, you know, it's probably still pretty fresh, and, you know, he's thinking about the next year, and I can understand why he might not be in the best headspace right now. But really, for him, for himself...
Right now? All this year, since the White House, do you think he was really determined and focused to ensure that the Boston Bruins would see a long run in the Stanley Cup Finals, or was he distracted?
Well, you'd have to ask him that.
What do you think? I'm asking you. Do you think, based on the play that you saw, you know, he was very good throughout the first half of the year? Now, it's certainly possible age and the amount of hockey that they had played, given that they won the Cup last year, caught up to him in the second half of the year.
Right.
But was he looking for excuses rather than his actual performance on the ice by having all these distractions pop up around him?
I don't know if it's that he was looking for excuses. I do think that he was affected by everything that was going on.
But it's all self-inflicted.
Right. No, and I'm not arguing with that. And I think that, you know, you sometimes think, and there are athletes that can deal with it better. And, you know, I think that Tim Thomas, he heard enough of it. And I think it was really, you know, after the Facebook comments, the comments that he made on his page, that after that, it started affecting him more. I don't think that it affected him about the reaction that he got. But I think it was the constant questions, and you could tell in media scrums he was constantly being asked about it, and he would walk away, and that was affecting him. Now, I do believe that for a guy like Timmy Thomas, he's a competitive guy, he's a passionate guy. I still think that he was going out there and giving 100%, but unfortunately that 100% was not good enough because his head was elsewhere.
Well, and that's the problem, and his head was elsewhere. Look, if he had not said anything, if he had not gone to the White House and just chalked it up to an illness or whatever, he doesn't publish his, you know, his manifesto, as it were. If he just keeps his mouth shut, nobody knows how his eccentricities are. Nobody cares about it. He put the focus on himself, and push comes to shove. When you put the focus on yourself, you better back it up. And he couldn't back it up, and that's where the problem lies. If he puts the focus on himself and he goes out and he dominates in the first round and he carries the Bruins to a lengthy Stanley Cup playoff run, you know, and even if they didn't necessarily have it in them because of the injuries, but if you can point to goaltending as not being a weakness in that first round series, then nobody says boo about it.
The weirdest thing was that it'd be in scrums, and the question would come up, and he would just put his hands up and walk away like a scared child.
Well, he didn't think that the question was worthy, or
yeah,
you know, you're giving a steak to a hungry pack of wolves. By coming out with your you know, public comments, and then you expect them not to devour the steak. It's sort of naive. Anyways, let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to head back out to New Jersey, and we'll be joined by our good friend Gary Lawless. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important decisions you will make in life. That's not a decision you want to leave to an amateur. Get in touch with David Carr at Monopoly Realty at 230-6129. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, professionalism first and foremost. He will simplify your home, your real estate experience. David Carr, 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Back out to beautiful Newark, New Jersey. Gary Lawless, how are you, Gary?
Hey, guys.
How are you? We can barely hear you. Okay, let's see.
Terrible line here, fellas.
Yeah. You know what, Gary?
Have them call me back on my cell phone, okay?
Okay, we'll give you a call back.
This.
Okay. Obviously, that phone line would not be conducive for a lengthy interview, so we'll give Gary a call back on his cell phone momentarily.
Was Gary in the Bermuda Triangle?
I'm
where
not sure
where was he there? Was he in an episode of The X-Files?
Sounded like he was in a wind tunnel.
Yeah, I thought he was in his hotel room, which is he actually staying in an alley?
I don't know, but that, it sounded like there was some dust busting or some vacuuming going on, so hopefully we can get him on his cell.
Yeah, we're going to call his cell momentarily. Gary's, of course, in New Jersey for the Stanley Cup Finals, and then he'll head to Los Angeles for Games 3 and 4 and back to New Jersey if necessary for Game 5. Wayne Gretzky going to do the puck drop at Game 3.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, he and Gary released that, I think, on Twitter and on the Free Press website earlier today. So we knew Gary, Gretzky was going to be at Game 3. So now that he's going to be in a predominant role, I think that I think that'll give the Kings a little bit of an extra boost if my suspicions are correct.
And another thing about Wayne Gretzky, and you, I know that you threw this in the show plan, Drew, was that Wayne Gretzky came out this week in a conversation with Larry Brooks of the New York Post, mentioning that maybe the Conn Smythe Trophy should be called the Jean Beliveau Trophy. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, Jean Beliveau was the first ever winner of that trophy. And, you know, I really found that a classy touch. Jean Beliveau is obviously a multiple Stanley Cup champion, and I thought that was a great idea, one that I'd be in favor of, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I think that recently the NHL seems to be putting more of an emphasis on saluting some of their past stars.
Yeah.
So, you know,
the Rocket Richard Trophy came out, about a decade ago. But, you know, as far as these trophies go, I mean, somebody that's only been a hockey fan for 5 or 6 years, we know that Conn Smythe was a former NHL owner, but a lot of people would have no idea who he is. Jean Beliveau is from a different era, but, you know, he's a player. This is a player's trophy. And, you know, I thought that, you know, a guy like Wayne Gretzky, when it comes from Wayne Gretzky, it means a lot. And, you know, this is not a new idea at all. You know, Ted Lindsay Award used to be the Lester B. Pearson Award. And that's not taking anything away from Lester B. Pearson, former Prime Minister of Canada. But
An airport. That's enough.
He has an airport.
He's got an airport.
Well, you've got an airport. You don't need an NHL trophy.
Right.
You know what, guys? I'm actually going to completely disagree with you. I love the name of the Conn Smythe Trophy. I think it salutes hockey's history that goes back, you know, almost or even 100 years now. And I really don't think that we should be stepping up and renaming these trophies. I think that's what name is.
It's a fair comment you make, Remus, because, you know, do you rename the trophies every 50 years, every 75 years? You know, at what point in time do we have a Wayne Gretzky trophy?
Well, I think the argument is, if we have a Wayne Gretzky trophy, what is it? Is it everything?
Well, is it the Hart Trophy becomes the Wayne Gretzky trophy?
I mean, I think if we collectively decide to rename the trophies, you know, every 50 years or every generation, then maybe I'd be in favor of it. But I like the history of the trophies and the name and the trophy room at the Hall of Fame.
Gary, Gary Lawless, you're back here. I think we have a better connection now. Is that right?
Yeah. Hey, guys.
How you doing, Gary?
I'm great.
That's good. Earlier, you mentioned that Wayne Gretzky is going to drop the puck at Game 3 for the Kings Devils. You released that on Twitter and on the Free Press website. But we were just talking about how Gretzky said that he thinks the Conn Smythe Trophy should be renamed the Jean Beliveau Trophy. What do you think about renaming of the, you know, end of year player awards?
Well, I'm not a big fan of that. You know, they can find another award to name after Jean Beliveau if they want to. These are historic names. They mean, the Conn Smythe means something to me. That's what, you know, Claude Lemieux won. That's what Ron Hextall won, and on and on and on. These are the guys that, that trophy means more to me than any other trophy in hockey. It's the one that is given to the best player in the playoffs every year, and that name, Conn Smythe, that will always be the MVP of the playoffs. To me.
Reasonable enough comment. You know, we thought we'd throw it to you on that one. Game 2 tonight, Kings Devils, 7 o'clock gets underway. You know, we were talking earlier in the show about how sort of Game 1, for the first 40 minutes, the teams were really feeling each other out, and then it started getting going in the third period. You expect them to sort of hit the ice running, as it were, for Game 2 tonight?
You know, I asked both coaches about that this morning, and Pete DeBoer was, and Daryl Sutter, all the players. I spoke to Mike Richards this morning. I talked to David Clarkson, a bunch of guys, and they're all of the same opinion. They wish they had played last night. And, you know, like, it was 4 days in New York before the first game, then they played, then they take 2 days off, and they play again tonight. I wouldn't be shocked if the first period was pretty ragged. All the complaints on Twitter about the first game, I don't think you can blame the players, because these are two very highly skilled teams. You look at the forwards on both clubs, lots of these guys can score. Their coaches don't coach a real that 1-4-1, the 1-3-1 style game. They forecheck and they try and force turnovers, and it didn't happen in game one because of the layoff. And then don't be surprised if tonight's ragged for a while as well.
Gary, at the GM meetings on Wednesday, they mentioned that they're going to go ahead with the hybrid icing rule, and I think we're all
in the American League.
In the American League, they tested out.
Yes.
That's correct. And that didn't come as a surprise to anyone. You know, go ahead.
That was a change. When we left Florida, they said, when we left Florida in March, they said hybrid icing would be in the NHL next year. And then they had time to think about it. And they asked the coaches. They went back to the coaches and said, what do you think? And they're like, why change the game? Why? The foot races are good. They're exciting. It gives the third and fourth line guys a way to impact the game. And so when they got back in the meeting on Wednesday, hockey operations had some stats and some data that sort of said, there's only been one injury. We've called penalties whenever a guy hits a guy on this. The referees have been really stringent about it. We're going to levy suspensions when this happens. Let's not change it so fast. So they're going to look at it in the American League and determine whether or not they want to do it. That was a little different than what was originally expected.
Do you think that after the year in the AHL, they won't implement it in the NHL? I know, you say...
Yeah, I don't think they will. Really? I think hybrid icing will get to the NHL.
Even, one injury, when you can prevent that one injury, and you're not eliminating the foot race necessarily, you're just blowing it dead before these guys run, shoulder first into a wall.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Drew. I'm telling you what the hockey people in the NHL think, and they don't want it.
That's fine. I'll ask
the players don't want it. They talk to the players. Hockey ops talk to the players. They talk to the union. The players aren't in favor of it.
Well, that's and I guess if the players aren't in favor of it, they're the ones who are putting their bodies at risk. So we can talk behind our mics and write in our papers all we want, but these are the guys who actually experience it firsthand. So do you think we're getting to a point where the players' opinions is going to carry more weight than it used to? Maybe not father knows best anymore?
Well, for sure. You look and see the change in how the NHL does things. Hockey ops... we never knew who they were or what they did for the longest time. And now, you've got Brendan Shanahan and his guys, Rob Blake and Stephane Quintal. They have a big voice. Then you've got the Toronto guys, Colin Campbell, Chris King, Kay Whitmore, and Mike Murphy's in that group as well. And those guys all have a voice. They go into these meetings. Colin Campbell and Mike Murphy, they're more than happy to fight with Glenn Sather and say, you're wrong. And go at it with them. So I think that hockey ops, the league has spent money in terms of research, and they've got good people that they believe in, that they trust, and those guys have a voice. They're all ex-players. All of them are ex-players. And they talk to players still. They understand what players are talking about, and that's been a big change in the game for me.
You wrote about Brendan Shanahan in today's Winnipeg Free Press, and you say that his discipline makes him the perfect man for the job. Do you think that at a point in time, if he's trying to really implement change in the league, but he keeps getting pushback, do you think his will to continue to implement that change will break down, and he'll just say, look, if you guys like it this way, so be it, and I'm not going to try and change things anymore?
That's possible, but I kind of see it in the opposite way. Gary Bettman anointed as much as appointed Brendan Shanahan. And if Brendan Shanahan fails, it looks bad on Gary Bettman. And obviously he doesn't want that. Gary Bettman is, without question, it's not even close, the most powerful man in hockey. And what he wants and what he says, he gets. So I have a feeling that Brendan Shanahan is going to have an opportunity to make some change. And my understanding is that the Wednesday meeting in here in Manhattan, it got hot at certain points. And in particular, Glenn Sather was quite exercised about certain aspects of what had gone on in the playoffs, and Shanahan didn't budge.
Gary, the other proposal that was brought up And I found this a little bit weird. And we should mention that they're not going to consider this for another year. This isn't going to the AHL. But there was another proposal brought up where, you know, teams might be sending a message and, you know, putting some goons out or doing some rough stuff at the end of the game. And there's a possibility that they would look at giving a team or a player a penalty in the next game of a playoff series. Where did this come from? Because as far as I'm concerned, that's not what I've been noticing is a problem. It's taking the headshots and maybe being a little bit more consistent in suspensions. I'm thinking of Shea Weber on Zetterberg. But where did this whole carrying over a penalty for a player come from?
Well, just let me correct you, Ezra. It's not over the next series. It's within a series.
Pardon me, next game. That's what I meant.
If player A gets a penalty with less than 2 minutes left in game one, and there's no goal scored on the power play, that penalty, with the remainder of that penalty, would carry over into game two of the same series.
Yep.
You know, they feel that some nights in the NHL, when a team is ahead 4-1 or 5-1 or whatever, the other team, you know, will try and send a message to the other club by doing something dirty towards the end of the game. And we do see that from time to time. The stick work gets a little excessive late in the game, or you'll see a hit, or, you know, Shea Weber, what he did to Henrik Zetterberg would have been, you know, the perfect case. That would have been a 5-minute major, and would have carried, the rest of it would have carried over into the next game. So I believe that, I'm not sure where it came from, but it was talked about on Wednesday, and it's something that they're going to talk about more, but Mike Gillis said to me, that's a radical change.
Yep.
We'll have to really talk about that one before we put it into effect. You know, the one thing that really came out of what happened on Wednesday is a lot of the GMs came out and said, we really like the game the way it is right now.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, and to some extent they're right, and there's certainly issues, but you know what, if they're the ones happy with it, and they're the ones who have to play in it day in, day out, you can sort of let it be. Gary, before we let you go, we're right up against it. You know, what should we look for in Game 2 tonight? You know, what do you think the keys to the Devils winning and the keys to the Kings winning?
Well, you know, the Kings, they said after Game 1 they played their worst game of the playoff, and then they still came out with a win. And I would agree, I would suggest that New Jersey was dominant for pretty long stretches of the second, third, and even overtime. So as much as New Jersey will have that emotional edge and will want to play better tonight and try and even the series, I think L.A. has just as much impetus to find their game. Tonight, real telltale game for me tonight. If this is going to be a series, we're going to see New Jersey's going to have to impose their will and say that they belong in this series. And if not, this will be over pretty quickly. LA, I think, is better. And Martin Brodeur, no offense, Ezra, that was a bad goal he let up early in game one. He needs to be better as well.
No offense taken. I agree. That wasn't his best effort right there.
Gary, thanks very much. We'll have to let you go and enjoy game two tonight, and then have a good flight to Los Angeles afterwards.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Gary. Thanks very much. Gary Lawless from the Winnipeg Free Press and Hustler and Lawless. Shortly past 2:15, let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Gary Lawless out there in beautiful Newark, New Jersey, for joining us prior to Game 2 of the Devils-Kings, which gets underway at 7 o'clock tonight. Of course, it is Santa Lucia Pizza Gold Eyes Game Day here on the station. Coming up later tonight, the Gold Eyes trying to continue their dominance at home against the Gary South Shore Railcats.
They really started off their homestand.
Well, they're
here.
They're 4
against Amarillo, they were really good.
Well, they're 4-0 on their homestand now.
Yep.
I think they're 10-3 on the year.
Yep.
Something like that. So Paul Edmonds will, of course, have your pregame show and all your coverage of the Gold Eyes game gets underway, I believe, at 5:30 this afternoon here on TSN 1290. And there's really nothing better than listening to Paul Edmonds call a baseball game.
Yep.
He does a tremendous job. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tom Simmons is on at Rumors tonight. Two shows, 7:45 and 10:30. 7:45 show is already sold out, so you still have a chance to see Tom Simmons at 10:30, his final show in Rumors after a terrific week run here, selling out shows left, right, and center. What we're going to do now is we're going to give away some tickets to this coming Thursday's show, 780-1290. Give us a shout, 780-1290. You can win tickets to go see John Roy at Rumors next Thursday night. It's an off night for the Stanley Cup Final, so a perfect way to spend it. Going to Rumors, seeing John Roy, 780-1290. Michael Remus is standing by to take your calls.
NHL news and notes.
As it was announced earlier this week that Marian Gaborik is going to be out for probably about 6 months as he needs rotator cuff surgery. Do you think, obviously that certainly would have affected him throughout the Stanley Cup Finals. Do you give him a bit of a pass on his performance as a result of that playing with that injury?
If he was that injured during the playoffs, then that is incredible, because he wasn't that bad. And considering that he wasn't really allowed to really display all of his offensive skills because the Rangers were, let's be honest, in defensive mode most of the year, I mean, it's pretty good. Gaborik had one of his best seasons. This past year was the first season he's played every game. I mean, Gabrick's had injury problems his entire career. With the Minnesota Wild, you were lucky to get 50 games out of him.
Oftentimes, yeah.
But you know, that's not good news for the Rangers. I mean, the Rangers were clearly in need of offense against the Devils. They didn't exactly light it up against the Devils,
right?
And you know, that's bad news. That means that Gaborik might miss 20 or 30 games. He might miss 40. But I mean, that's significant. But I do think you have to give him a bit of a pass. And you know, he was lacking in a little bit of speed. But you know, Gaborik was pretty good. You know, considering that he was fighting this, and he's had some back issues and groin issues. But again, you just have to hope that he's going to not miss too many games.
Well, he's going to be out 6 months, is what they say. So 6 months,
that's 3 months at the beginning of the season.
That's November.
Right.
That's November before he comes back. And this is a Rangers team that didn't have a lot of offense to begin with.
Right. So that basically means that you're going to ask other guys to have to step up.
Well, I think what it means is you're not going to see an end to John Tortorella's shot-blocking style. That he lashed out at critics this week in the end of the season.
Tortorella lashed out at critics.
Shocking!
He's never done that before, Drew.
No, not or specifically to you. So you know, firsthand.
I deserved it. I mean, ask Gary. I deserved it.
I don't think you deserved it. I think you missed.
Gary thought I did.
I think you.
I think Gary just doesn't like me.
Well, that's also quite possible. But I think you just worded the question a little incorrectly. That's all.
That was
your problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Had you worded it better, I don't think he lashes out at you as
so
much.
So what was his most recent lash out?
Well, he's just saying that he doesn't understand all the criticism he was receiving for implementing this shot blocking style. And I mean, you were a defender of the shot blocking style.
I'm a defender. Well. Hold on. I'm a defender of shot blocking. Not necessarily I never defended his he was obsessed with it. And I mean, you could tell that the player it was not something that the players really enjoyed. I mean, Brad Richards and Marian Gaborik, those guys really even though they might have been a little bit tired because the first two rounds were both seven gamers. You could tell that it was getting in their heads. It was like, oh, okay, I got to go out and block more shots. I mean, Brad Richards and Marian Gaborik are offensive guys. They should be focused on scoring. I think it worked well. I mean, it got them to the Eastern Conference Finals. But I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they could have they were a little bit lucky and they overachieved a little bit in that sense. But you know, a guy like Gaborik, they're going to miss him. But the Rangers. Maybe now they might have to seriously go after a guy like Parise, knowing that Gaborik might be out. But they might have to be looking at the free agency route, even though they've brought up some guys like Kreider and Stepan at a young age. But it's definitely definitely have to give – if he was suffering from an injury – and by the way, let's not forget that Kovalchuk is also has a bit of a nagging injury right now. He missed a game earlier.
His hip, I believe, yeah.
It's his hip. So, I mean, you have to give him a little bit of a pass. But, you know, this could be a good thing. Gabrick's had a long history of injuries. If you want him, you know, to have any time of the year where he's going to miss time, it's probably, you know, if half of it at least, you want it to be now.
Yeah. If a strategy is wearing down your players, isn't there a fault in the strategy? You know, like you said, the Rangers players were, by the end of the season, by the end of the round against the Devils, The players had been worn out by the shot-blocking strategy.
That wasn't a fresh team in that series.
It certainly wasn't. Now, it certainly came into, obviously the first 2 7-game series played a factor in that.
Yeah.
But isn't there something wrong with the style then if it's wearing down your players so that they can't be, so that they're having difficulty getting to the Stanley Cup Finals?
See, I think, I think the focus was rightly so on the New York Rangers shot-blocking, but the problem is you have to be able to block shots and transition that into offense. Today's NHL is all about offense, and there's a right to believe that the first game was not very conducive to entertaining hockey. I mean, there were limited scoring chances. It did go to overtime, so that basically saved the game, and it was a close game. But we were all watching the game at the cheer, and that first period was pretty bad. When you've only got 6 or 7 shots on net, it's tough to really get into a game. It's tough for each team to establish anything in that. And I think to answer your question, Drew, there is a little bit of a problem in that strategy. I think he was too focused on defense and not focused on offense. You can't have both. You can't win without both. And there were certain guys that were basically invisible in that series. And sure, the Devils definitely did play well, and there were certain guys that stepped up, like Kovalchuk and Henrique, and they were tenacious with their forecheck. But, the Rangers might have forgot a little bit about that putting the puck in the net is pretty important, too.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment.
Look, we talked about this last week. Is it a coincidence that both teams in the Stanley Cup final now had the least amount of blocked shots in the regular season?
And the most goals.
And did they have the most goals? Kings were low down on the goals.
Well, no, in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, they had the most goals. Yeah. I think part of the Rangers' strategy, at certain times, it looked almost idiotic to me. I mean, you had a player like Chris Kreider, who's an offensive player, I think it was him, jumping in front of a point shot like he's on Jackass. Every time a guy jumps in front of a block shot to block a shot, I just cringe. I can't believe that these guys do this.
Well, they buy into the system, and the system obviously was good enough to get them to a point, but if it's not good enough or it takes too much out of them in order to win the cup final, then is the system really worthwhile? And that's the question that you have to ask yourself. What system, are you happy with a system that gets you into the Eastern Conference Finals but doesn't allow you to really win those finals and or be fresh enough to compete for the Stanley Cup Finals?
Right, and then you see there was a game where Henrik Lundqvist led in 4 goals, and then so you're also counting on defense. And I think there's something to be said that the two most defensive teams, the New York Rangers and the Phoenix Coyotes, they ran out of gas. Both of the teams that were quote-unquote playing the most boring hockey were both teams that basically it got to the point where it didn't matter how good defensively you were playing, you weren't scoring enough. So, I mean, even though we might be getting back into a little bit of the dead puck era, the two teams that are left have the most talent. I mean, Parise, Kovalchuk, Zajac, Eliáš, Kopitar, Brown, Carter. Those are the two teams that are the last one standing.
So at some point in time, talent, more than anything else, might win out more than systems. Hopefully that's the case. Congratulations to Gilly, Dale, and Jason. They're off to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club next Thursday. They won the contest for this week, so they'll be able to see some great comedy at Rumors featuring John Roy. You can see John starting Tuesday night at Rumors. Let's go to break. When we come back, Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program from ESPN Chicago, Jesse Rogers. Jesse, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Good afternoon to you guys.
Jesse, let's start with a guy that Winnipeg fans would know well from last year, Johnny Oduya. Since the Blackhawks re-signed him to a 3-year contract extension earlier this week, since they acquired him from Winnipeg at the trade deadline, what did the Hawks like about Oduya's game that resulted in them making the sizable commitment?
Yeah, there's no doubt they liked how he fit in with the rest of the team in terms of his style of play, moving the puck, in terms of the transition that he brings, good skating ability. And really did solidify things even on the defensive end for a while there. Didn't have a great playoff, But he was able to slot right into the middle of their defense as a number four. That moved a couple guys, you know, a guy down, that moved the guy up. It just kind of solidified things. And I think, as most teams do, they you know, think they're going to win on defensive depth and defensive talent and mostly on that puck possession transition game. And that's where Aduya fits in maybe more with the Hawks than other teams. I think that's what they liked about him.
Jesse, the Blackhawks have bowed out 2 years in a row now in the first round. And, you know, one of the guys that I think has maybe not played at his 2010 level is Duncan Keith. Do the Hawks need a guy like Duncan Keith to recapture that 2010 success for the team to regain their position as one of the strongest teams in the Western Conference?
Yeah, well, it certainly wouldn't hurt. He played better this past year than the year before. But has not, like you said, you know, played as well as he did in not just the Norris Trophy year, but even in the years leading up to the Norris Trophy, he was a plus 30, plus 33. He was putting up some big numbers. You know, he's turning into a player that's not as offensive-oriented as you'd imagine with his skating ability, doesn't have a great shot. He's not great on the power play, so his speed is usually used to kill plays, and that's not always happening either. Now, and I'm talking at the highest of levels. Still, you know, if you put him up against team second and third lines, he's still going to be very good. But he isn't killing plays, and that's the best way to put it, in terms of power plays when he's on the penalty kill or just 5-on-5 when he's up against the other team's top lines. And, you know, he's had some bounces go against him. And what I've noticed, he's a very, you know, mental player, for lack of a better word. If he has a bad start to a game, if he has a bad first period, that sometimes can carry over. If just the littlest of things goes wrong, it can really derail him for a day or a week. So, yeah, he just hasn't found his groove since winning that Norris Trophy, and they absolutely could use a return to form there.
Keeping with the defense, Nicholas Hjalmarsson has not really developed, you know, as the Hawks expected since they matched the Sharks' contract offer to him. Are the Hawks looking to move him to free up some cap space?
Well, that would be the most likely candidate. I don't know if they're actively, you know, dangling him or not, but I think that would be the most likely candidate. He's the one that doesn't necessarily fit their style. If you're not a puck-moving sort of offensive-oriented skating guy, then maybe you come with some size because that'll at least kill plays on the defensive end and help on the penalty kill. Well, he doesn't really play big. He's not huge. And again, he's not your typical puck possession, you know, transition guy. He doesn't produce points. He goes up against, you know, he goes up the boards on plays instead of maybe, you know, making the transition pass to the forwards. So, yeah, he doesn't necessarily fit in. And like you say, he hasn't progressed the way they may have thought. So I think he could be dangled. However, you know, other teams see the fact that he scores 10, 12 points in 80-plus games and isn't playing as big as he could. His plus-minus wasn't terrible. Again, I think he can do well against second and third lines, but he can't do as well against the top lines in the league. You put him up against the Sedins, he's going to get beat. So if he's moved as a number five, well, then he's overpaid. If he's moved as a three or four, then he's probably paid the right way, but he might be sort of overvalued in a sense because he doesn't play as well as a number three should. So he's kind of in between there, and I just don't know how teams around the league would look at him. I think many that have cap space would take him as a number four, but teams that are up against it I don't think would roll the dice necessarily thinking that, you know, he's the final piece. So again, I think there would be some interest in him around the league, but maybe not again, you know, not necessarily the premier teams.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago. Jesse, since the end of the Blackhawks season, since they bowed out to the Coyotes, we've read a lot about the dysfunction in the front office between Joel Quenneville and Stan Bowman that really culminated in the firing of Mike Haviland. For our listeners who may not be aware, can you sort of explain the source of the dysfunction? And is it now water under the bridge, or is it still something that's simmering underneath the surface?
Well, I think it's still simmering. I think it, you know, part of it comes down to the fact that Scotty Bowman is a senior advisor. Okay, he's Stan Bowman's father. He's also regarded as one of the great hockey coaches of all time. So I think there's something going on there where there's just too much overlap. When things went south on the ice this past year, Scotty was making some suggestions in terms of the coaching. He sent one of his right-hand men that he's been with a long time, Barry Smith, down to the ice to help Joe Quenneville. Does a Stanley Cup winning coach like Quenneville need help, even in a down year? That's a little unusual. But at the same time, personnel things with his son, Stan, and sort of also in that, you know, I want to defend my son mode, which any of us would be in. So I think there's a lot of things going on there that involves Scotty Bowman being at the top of the sort of ladder. And, you know, the people above Scotty, the sort of non-hockey people, are going to trust him as well because of his history. But at the same time, they also like Joe Quenneville, who helped win a Stanley Cup. So there's some torn allegiances, if you want to put it that way. There's some torn loyalties. I think that was certainly the case in the coaching staff. Mike Kitchen, the other assistant coach, is a Quenneville guy. Mike Haviland sort of got out of favor with Quenneville and is more of a Bowman guy. So I think this year they're trying to draw a line in the sand and say, okay, Quenneville, this is your staff, you coach. Scotty, Stan, fine, go ahead and do the personnel, discuss it, you know, whatever you need to do, but let's not let the two sides kind of mix the way they did. But again, I still think there's some things simmering because the more heat Stan takes, I think Scotty's going to try to deflect it on Joel, and I think that's kind of what happened, whether it was purposely, sort of just out of defense of his son, whatever the case may be, but there's something simmering there under the surface.
Jesse, this dysfunction in the Hawks office that was happening during the season, before the playoffs, during the playoffs, did any of this somehow seep into the locker room and cause any problems, or you know, were these players that might have been aware of it just blocking it out?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, if the front office was listening to this conversation, anybody in there, they would say we're blowing this all out of proportion. And I don't think we are when it comes to the people involved, but maybe you're right when you bring up maybe it didn't really seep down to the players. I will say this. When you have three coaches for 60-plus games, Scotty Bowman sends his guy down from the front office to actually instruct them. These players start to wonder who's in charge. And when you start to wonder who's in charge, you can tell, you know, you can make the leap that the fabric of the chemistry and team unity starts to erode a little bit. It doesn't mean it has to erode, but you could make that conclusion. There's some dysfunction even within the locker room. There's no doubt Barry Smith was directing things, talking to the players who were spinning the authority of the other assistants, and maybe even Quenneville a little bit. I know for a fact that Quenneville did not like the presence of Barry Smith. So the answer is yes, it seemed to the locker room. How much did the players really care who was telling them what in terms of the assistant coaches? I don't know. You know, it's hard to know. All I know is they had an underachieving season and got bounced in the first round rather easily by Phoenix, and so the results speak for themselves.
A few weeks ago, we saw Patrick Kane's latest exploits on Deadspin and other internet sites, and we now read the Hawks have been encouraging Kane to seek treatment. You know, coming off his statistically worst season as a pro, how concerned are the Blackhawks management that his behavior will self-destruct what should have been a top-flight NHL career?
I think they're concerned. I don't think there's any doubt about it. There's a lot of moving parts to this story, a lot of layers. I think the biggest, most important one is simply, when you talk about self-destruct, it's getting arrested again. It's getting into a major fight or brawl or just in a bad situation where something really bad happens. Now, that's separate from whether he's playing up to his capabilities. I mean, what he did a few weeks ago was, you know, 5 months before training camp and, you know, several weeks after the season ended. You're allowed to have some fun. But putting himself in a position where something really bad could happen is, I think, their first concern. Now, the part about, you know, whether he's reaching his potential, that's a cloudy issue. We don't know exactly. There are plenty of players that party during the season and have great years. There are plenty of players that don't party and have bad years. As far as I know, he shows up to practice. I mean, I know he does. I see him there. Shows up to games on time. What he's doing in his free time during the season, you know, who knows? He's having fun like anyone else. But he did have the worst season of his career. So it's kind of a combination of things. I guarantee you this. If he had 95 points this past year and lit it up in the playoffs, even in a first-round exit, a lot less questions would be asked of Kane after what happened in Madison. But it's that whole combination of things. And the fact that he turned down playing in the World Championships for Team USA, which I think a lot of people were irked by, and then they see the photos of him. So, again, a lot of layers there. But first and foremost, putting yourself in a college campus on a party weekend, on a holiday with fraternity people and sorority girls, and it's a recipe for disaster as a multimillion-dollar athlete. I think that's the number one concern.
Jesse, we'll let you go on this last question. The Hawks don't have a ton of cap room going into the real heart of the offseason, especially after signing Oduya. You know, it appears as though this roster that they have right now, barring some significant trades, is the one they're going to go with in 2012-2013. Why is this team any better than the team that lost to Phoenix in round one?
Well, they'll tell you that Johnny Oduya for a whole season will make a difference. They took the money that they spent on Andrew Brunette, who was a bust, and a couple other players, and Sean O'Donnell, and they basically gave that to Oduya. So they're hoping that's an upgrade there. The other thing will be they'll make the case that Corey Crawford should rebound and have a big year or a better year, as sometimes guys do from their sophomore to third years. So there's a case to be made, and then they can even tell you that special teams from year to year changes. And there's no way that both power play and penalty kill units will be as bad as they were last year, especially because Joe Quinville's making a commitment for them to be better, personnel-wise, strategy-wise. So I think that they can make that case. You can't necessarily deny it. I think Oduya does help, but I don't think they're big enough on defense. Sean O'Donnell was not the answer there, even though he has size. He couldn't skate as well. And I don't think they have a net presence on the power play. Now, maybe those are specifics that you can get by, because not every team's going to be perfect in the salary cap era. So I think they're making the cases internally that Crawford will be better, our special teams will be better, and Oduya for a full year will make us better on defense.
Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Take care, Jesse. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
Let's go to break. One final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Tim, I'm glad you selected this song, because I feel like you're all my brothers.
I think we're going to end the show 10 minutes early today. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago for just having joined us. This segment, the final segment, is brought to you by our good friends at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. Our good friends at Carbone are such good friends that they've given away two Carbone gift cards. First two callers through at 780-1290. First two callers through at 780-1290. You win a Carbone gift card. Try and let somebody else win if you've already won in the last few weeks or so. So give us a call, 780-1290, and you can head off to Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza with a nice gift card in your pocket.
It's funny. I just picture this guy showing up at Carbone with 10 gift cards.
No.
Trying to cash them all in at the same time.
No. I'm supervising it all, so I we're keeping good track on it. Don't worry about that. Anyways, Carbone Gold Coal-Fired Pizza. Great pizza. Terrific.
I love the pizza.
Oh, man.
I like the pepino pizza. Try that. Or the capo pizza. Like, very good.
You like prosciutto. You're a big prosciutto guy.
And arugula, too.
Yeah.
The pepino is great.
In fact, that's your nickname is Arugula Ginsburg, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a great location there on Taylor, heart of River Heights.
Exactly.
Rapid fire.
Philadelphia Flyers. There's a lot of connections between the Philadelphia Flyers and the Los Angeles Kings. Mike Richards and Jeff Carter, first and foremost.
Yep.
You know, Justin Williams used to be a Flyer. Simone Gagné used to be a Flyer. Yep. John Stevens used to be Flyers head coach. Ed Snyder.
Well, and not to mention they're both 1967 expansion teams.
They're right. They're expansion brothers. Exactly right. True there. Ed Snyder, Flyers owner and founder, says he's not the least bit bitter about the success that the ex-Flyers have been having out in Los Angeles. I think specifically Mike Richards and Jeff Carter.
It's a very diplomatic tone that he's taking.
Do you believe him when he says that he's not bitter to see Carter and Richards' success after they were traded from Philly last season?
It has to bug him a little bit. I mean, Mike Richards and Jeff Carter had been Philadelphia Flyers since 05-06, and you know they made the decision to let both of them go and basically changed the look of the team. And I still think that you know the Flyers got the better of those trades. I think Braden Schenn's going to be a very good player. They got him from L.A. Wayne Simmonds, I thought, was fantastic all year. They got Voracek from Columbus. So I think, you know what, I think Paul Holmgren did very well there, and I think he doesn't get credit sometimes for being a good GM. But it has to bug Ed Snyder a little bit. I mean, the L.A. Kings weren't looking too good in the season, and they've turned it up. And, you know, it's hard to say if one owner, you know, I mean, you never want to see owners not, you know, hoping for the best for other owners. But, I mean, when you look at how well Richards and Carter have done since they acquired Carter from Columbus, and I bet Ed Snyder didn't see that coming, that Carter was going to end up in L.A. But when your season goes like it did in Columbus, I mean, anything's a possibility. But I think deep inside it has to bug him somewhat. How can it not?
I would agree with you. I think he's being very diplomatic, but I think he's lying through his teeth also. I think he thinks that he made this great commitment to Richards and Carter. And he did. He made a long, sizable commitment to them. But I think, honestly, I think he's pissed off at the way it ended there. I think he thinks that they were probably partying too much and they weren't as fully committed. And now he sees a year later.
Right, and Drew, you know what? I mean, we've talked about this before. They tried so hard to get those guys to turn their act around, and it never happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't remember any other NHL team making such a commitment to two guys and then in 1 year making an about-face and trading those guys.
Within the span of 15 minutes getting rid of both of them at the same time, practically.
But you know what? The future probably looks brighter with the guys that they brought in.
Maybe. It's hard to see the forest through the trees
right.
when the other teams are in the Stanley Cup Finals right away.
Yeah.
Moving on in rapid fire. If the Los Angeles Kings win the Stanley Cup, the House of Ink in Venice Beach, California, is offering free commemorative tattoos to any Kings fan. Apparently, the owner is a very big Kings fan and is, you know, doing his part to make the Kings' success permanent, I would suspect. Sure. If you had to get a Los Angeles Kings-related tattoo, what would you receive?
Well, none of us have tattoos, but if I was to get an L.A. Kings, and I must say before this, I would only get a Winnipeg Jets tattoo. That's where my allegiance lies. But
Can I just interrupt for a second? I don't think you should get a tattoo.
Well, I'm not getting a tattoo, but I said for the purposes of this question, if I was to get an LA Kings related tattoo, which I never would because it would be a Jets tattoo, it would probably be something along the lines of a 99 or something like that. Just Gretzky. He was my favorite King of all time, and I think that would be the baddest tattoo, so it would probably be something to honor Gretzky's time in LA.
I'd get the hideous 97 third jersey tattooed.
Yeah. Great.
That's
right.
With the Burger King logo.
That had to be one of the worst ever.
No argument for me there. That was a pretty bad tattoo. that was actually just terrible. Last question in rapid fire before we head to cheers and jeers. At the end of his press conference the other day, Daryl Sutter, and apparently he's been doing this for a while now, ended his press conference with a double reverse peace sign.
Yeah, you know what? I looked at the video of that you linked to us. I don't know. It looks awkward. I don't really know what he's doing. It's cool. But, you know, Daryl Sutter's kind of a man of few words. He'll tell you what he feels, but he's, you know, he's not exactly the most loquacious person or the most, you know, animated person. He's pretty old school, straight up. So, I mean, if he likes doing it, good for him. But I don't know.
It's a little bizarre.
Looks a little weird when he does
really?
It.
I thought it looked cool. I
like it. It's good to see a coach showing personality. But I'll tell you what. At the end of he did this at the end of his first press conference when he was introduced as the Kings head coach. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all the media are assembled. You hear the reputation of Daryl Sutter as sort of a bit of a, you know, not a gruff guy, but, you know, serious guy.
No, he's He's a tough guy.
Okay. Well, I said gruff, not tough. But anyways, yeah. He ends his press conference with a double reverse peace sign. You're like, what does that mean?
It means he's the man. Knows how to party. He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
You're not terribly far off.
My new favorite coach.
Before we go to cheers and jeers, congratulations to Mike and Al. They're the winners of the Carbone gift cards.
Way to go, Mike
and
Al.
They're off to get some good pizza at Carbone, coal-fired pizza. Let's wrap this up.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Michael Remus, cheer or jeer?
I'm going to cheer because I'm a positive guy. I'm cheering Anze Kopitar for scoring not just for scoring that beautiful overtime winner on Martin Brodeur, but for knowing that 4 years ago he went backhand on Brodeur, and so this time on a breakaway he went forehand. And Brodeur was like, yeah, he went backhand on me last time, so I thought he was going to go backhand again.
That's a good observation, actually.
I read that in the post-game comments. I can't believe that these guys know. Yep. I guess that's how far video review has come.
Kopitar is a talented player, and he's gotten a few highlight reel goals in the playoffs. I like that cheer.
Ezzy, cheer or jeer, or can I just assume you're somehow going to cheer Martin Brodeur?
No, I'm going to cheer Gretzky. We talked about Gretzky last week and how he should be more involved in the game, and then, you know, Gary Lawless broke the news that he's going to be dropping the puck tonight.
No.
Pardon me, game three.
Yeah, Monday night.
In L.A.?
Yeah.
That's great.
It would be a little odd if he dropped the puck in New Jersey, I gotta say.
After he called him a Mickey Mouse organization.
Yeah.
No, it's no game three, obviously. So, you know, that's great to hear. That's going to be awesome. That's going to be one of those moments that gives you goosebumps because, you know, it was 1993. That was almost 20 years ago that Gretzky led the Kings. So it's going to be nice to see him, greatest player of all time, dropping that puck in L.A. That's a great touch.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers, but I'm going to jeer Tim Thomas of the current, still of the Boston Bruins, but who knows for how much longer. Look, Tim, you've had a great career. If you don't want to play anymore, just go gently into the night. Stop putting the focus on you. Stop making it all about you. Whatever it is, just, you know, make your decision and move on one way or the other. Right now, you're just really causing a distraction and sort of embarrassing yourself and your legacy, however it may be at this point in time.
And I think I speak for everyone when we cheer Richie's shiny buff in Toronto.
Of course. The shiny buff is a unanimous cheer across the board.
Right.
Yeah. We'll hear about the shiny buff next week when he's back here, behind the mic so that we can make fun of him in person as opposed to also long distance making fun of. Richard, of course, is in Toronto. He was away this week. Michael Remus, you've done a fabulous job filling in. Thanks
very
much.
Thanks for having me. It's been a great time on this side of the glass.
Our pleasure for having you. Timmy, thank you for doing your usual job behind the glass. Solid work as always. A big thank you to our guests. Our guest today, that was Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago. That is Matt Laughlin, Devils play-by-play man on WFAN Radio. Rick Ralph and Gary Lawless of this station, you heard from them both. And, of course, Bob Duff of the Windsor Star. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. For Michael Remus, for Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Tim, my name is Drew Mindell. Thanks for listening. And if it's Saturday, it's The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk. Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.